So welcome again, and anyone who's joined us. It's Earth Day today, and the theme of the talk this evening, and the theme of the evening as a whole, is really responding wisely and compassionately to this unprecedented moment that we're living in today. It's been called the era of the sixth great extinction, you know, in history. And I'll talk some about that this evening. I'll talk about how we can respond and how the practice of mindfulness and the practices of compassion and loving kindness can support us responding wisely and responding appropriately to the moment that we're living in today. I want to explore that today, not as a sense of putting forward a view particularly, but more raising questions. I think the most important thing is the inquiry, the questions more than the answers, because I think all of us have to find our own way to the answers, to our own answers, to what's true for us and what's appropriate for us. And it won't be the same. You know, how do we respond to the situation, the moment we're living in? It won't be the same for all of us. But I want to begin with what I think is one of the most important questions that we can ask in the practice of mindfulness, and really in any spiritual practice. And this is the question: how am I meeting this moment? How am I meeting this moment? How am I meeting this experience? I can ask it just this moment. How are you meeting this moment, sitting here right now, just bringing awareness to whatever is arising? This is really, I think, a question that is at the core of really of the Buddha's teachings of the Four Noble Truths about suffering and the end of suffering. This question, how am I meeting this moment, can help us bring awareness to the suffering that may be present, the cause of that suffering, the possibility of finding an end to the suffering by meeting this moment in a wise and compassionate and accepting way, and the path that there is to the end of suffering, that we can meet it by asking, how am I meeting this moment? Kind of this moment is really pivotal in terms of our freedom, our well-being. This question, how am I meeting this moment, really incorporates awareness, recognizing what's present for us, and also the attitude that we bring, the attitude of meeting this moment. It may be a very painful moment. It may be a moment of grief or loss. How am I meeting this? How am I responding to this moment? What is the attitude of heart and mind that I bring to this feeling, this loss or this grief or this anger or this joy that's present? It also brings up, I think, how do we respond to what's present for us? There's an old Zen story where a student comes to visit his dying teacher. And the student asks, what is the teaching of your entire lifetime? What is the teaching of your entire lifetime? And the teacher replies, an appropriate response. An appropriate response. So all of the teachings really come down to, how do I respond? How do you respond to this moment, to what is going on for us internally in our lives, as well as in the kind of the larger social, global questions that come up for us? How we meet this moment really determines our happiness, our well-being, our freedom. As you've probably seen and probably know, that you don't control everything about what happens to you. Have you noticed that?
Have you noticed that things come up that maybe they weren't really what you wanted to happen, or things that you wanted to happen didn't happen? There's a lot that comes up in our lives that isn't what we're not really controlling. There's even a lot that comes up internally that we're not controlling. You know, do you control the thought that comes up in your mind? Well, maybe some of the time you can direct your thoughts. But a lot of the time, you might have noticed this in meditation. A thought comes up, you find yourself planning your vacation, thinking about something that happened at work today. We don't control. An emotion may come up. You know, we feel sadness comes from somewhere. We don't control fully what happens externally or internally. What we do have a great deal of influence over is how we respond to what comes up, to what's present. How we meet this moment. And this is really the training of the Buddha's path, training the mind to meet whatever is arising skillfully, compassionately, wisely, letting go of, rather than, you know, if anger comes up in the mind, one way of responding to that is like to act it out, you know, to get into that story of they're doing, they're bad, they're wrong, you know, and act it out, send an angry email, scream at somebody. Another way of meeting it is to feel, this is anger, this is what it feels like, it's tight, it's hot, there's lots of stories in the mind, and meet it with a different quality of attention and a different kind of attitude. And how we meet this moment really determines whether what happens leads to suffering or leads to well-being. This is really the choice in each moment. How I meet this moment really creates the conditions for happiness, or it may create the conditions for suffering, for stress, for worry. So we cultivate states of mind and heart, love, compassion, equanimity, joy, gratitude. And we bring awareness to painful or difficult states without identifying with them, without getting caught up in them. We feel if anger's present, if fear's present, if shame's present, to meet it with kindness. As Rumi says, welcome the guests, even if they're a crowd of sorrows. So this question of how am I meeting this moment is really a critical one in our lives and in our practice. And we can ask the same question in relation to our world, to this larger moment that we're living in. How am I, how are you, how are we meeting this collective moment? How are we meeting on this Earth Day the suffering of our Earth and all of the species and the beings who live on this planet? The invitation, and what we'll do in a couple of minutes, is I'll invite you to pause, and we'll just kind of take a few minutes of meditation and reflection. And what I'll share with you are some truths, some things that are true, as you know, as far as we can tell, the best science that's around, what it's telling us about our world right now. And the invitation is to meet these truths, which many of them you will be already familiar with, but just to sit with them and see what comes up for you. What is the response of your heart, your mind, your body to what I'll be sharing. If you like, you can close your eyes for this, or just get into a kind of as receptive a state as you can. You don't have to sit in a kind of formal way, but just receiving what's coming in. The first thing I'd like to share is the world's animal population has halved in 40 years. Between 1970 and 2010, as we humans have put more and more demands on the earth and on ecosystems and on what other beings need to survive. 76% of freshwater wildlife has vanished, has gone. 39% of marine species and land animals have gone. So just to sit with that, just notice anything, what's present in the body, thoughts coming up in the mind, any emotions, any response. And whatever response comes up, just to meet it with kindness, with acceptance. Some of the animals that are on the verge of extinction include polar bears, as the sea ice that they use to hunt seals is melting as the temperature of the earth rises. Lions, their numbers have fallen by half in 20 years. Elephants, tigers, all six subspecies of tiger are endangered. Gorillas, blue whales. Just to mention some of the other species. Mountain gorilla, Sumatran elephant, porpoise, rhino, all critically endangered. Panda, tuna, blue whale. The last three decades have been the warmest in 1400 years. Takes us back almost to the fall of the Roman Empire, 1400 years. Sea levels have risen more than in 2000 years, so going back to the time of Jesus. Carbon dioxide, CO2, methane and nitrous oxide levels have increased to levels not seen in 800,000 years. So just sitting with these truths, but also sitting with there are positive things that are happening too. Some of you might have been to the action in New York in the fall. There were 300,000 to 400,000 people calling for climate action. There's a growing awareness of the moment that we're living in and where it is leading us, and the how essential it is to take action in a very, very short period of time. As you probably know, President Obama has made climate change a major focus in his second term. There's been an important agreement with the US and China, two major economic powers, to reduce emissions. The denial that was kind of around has become more marginal. There's still very powerful figures denying that, well, humans have any real cause, you know, responsibility in these changes. So just holding all of this, holding the positive, the sense in which I think more and more people are waking up to this moment that we're living in, waking up to the need to act together, to take collective action as well as individual action in our lives. But also that studies show that we need 1.5 Earths to regenerate the natural resources we currently use. But unfortunately, we don't have another half a planet or another spare. You know, if this one doesn't quite work, where do we go? You know, 7 billion or 10 billion people in time going to the moon, not very likely. So we cut trees faster than they mature. We harvest more fish than the oceans replenish. We emit more carbon into the atmosphere than the forests and the oceans can absorb. And as the science is showing, the human influence on these changes is unequivocal. And where it's leading is to a warmer earth with all of the changes that we're already seeing, you know, changes in the climate, changes in weather systems, hurricanes, rising sea levels. And the truth that the great, great likelihood that those who will suffer the most will be the poorest of the poor, that there will be social, economic impacts, that you know, the likelihood of people being forced from their homes and more conflict arising, all of those things look very, very likely. So the question is not to kind of, you know, invite us all to be kind of pessimistic, but to just to sit as the teachings of the Dharma, the teachings of the Buddha, invite us to take refuge in truth, in reality, to start from truth. And how do we sit? How do we hold these truths? How do we hold this evidence that's around us, that's before us? How do we respond? What is, as the Zen teacher said, what is an appropriate response to what we see happen, what is happening all around us, what the changes that human beings are bringing about in our world, in the only planet that we have? How do we respond? And how do these teachings and practices support us responding? One of the things I think that's most hopeful and most inspiring to me is that these practices of mindfulness, of loving kindness, of compassion, equanimity, provide a way of opening to the truth and responding wisely and compassionately. That this way of responding, way of meeting our experience, our individual experience, and our collective experience, is really essential, I think, if we are collectively to find a wise response, an appropriate response to what we know is happening. We know in our emotions, we know in our bodies, we know in our minds that this is happening. So how is it to open to these truths? What comes up for you? I'd be interested, just checking on the time here, we're doing okay. What came up? Anyone just like to throw out a word or a couple of words about what came up for you just as I shared some of these realities that we're experiencing? Any particular feeling that came up? Anyone like to share anything? Yes, please. Right. So actually sitting with it is practice. Is Dharma practice. Lovely, thank you. Thank you. Anyone else? Yes, please.
Sadness.
Anyone else feel sad? Sadness come up? Yeah, quite a few people. Yes, please.
Devastating.
Yeah. Yeah. Heartbroken. Yeah. Thank you. If we allow ourselves to take in these truths, then it's quite natural, I think, for sadness, for grief, for brokenheartedness to come up. And from the standpoint of these teachings and these practices, that is not wrong or bad. That is resting in the truth of our experience, of saying, yes, this is true. Because so much of what our response, our collective response, is denial. Even if we kind of acknowledge it, we're not kind of saying, oh, you know, this isn't really happening. I'm not talking about that kind of denial, but more of a denial of like, I don't really want to look at that because I've got too many things going on in my life. I've got to work. I've got to bring up a family. I've got to make a living. You know, I've already got so much on my plate. How can I take all of this in? And again, this is another response. If this is what's true, what's coming up, just to meet this too with kindness and ask ourselves, You know, how do I sit with this as a response? Not to make any response wrong. You know, it might be that for some resistance comes up. I didn't come here. I didn't want to hear a talk about this tonight. That might be a response too. And just to meet that too with kindness, with acceptance. Somebody here had something to share, did you?
Neglect.
Is it a sense that who's neglecting? A collective neglect? Yeah. So it's kind of a sense in the mind that a judgment or a thought that that we collectively are neglecting our home. It sounds like, yes, thank you. Yes, please. Right. So what he shared is that a teacher, a mindfulness, a meditation Dharma teacher, spoke about it's not so much changing or avoiding it or preventing it, but being with the reality of it and meeting it with, you know, how do we respond to this? How do we deal with what is already happening, the changes already happening? So thank you, and thank you all for those who shared. I think the place we have to begin is in taking refuge in the truth. And that may be taking refuge. A wonderful teacher, Joanna Macy, talks about working with despair. It's kind of somewhat similar to what you shared. Like this sense of it's so large, it's such a huge thing. It's our home, it's our children, our grandchildren, our own lives, our children, our grandchildren, the generations. What is the world that we're leaving to, you know, to our children and our grandchildren and their grandchildren? And we can actually sit with despair, not as a story of, oh, nothing can, we can't do anything, but rest in the truth of that this is a desperate situation. But from there, to really inquire, and this is the inquiry, what is a wise and appropriate response to what we're experiencing and what we're living through? I want to just talk briefly about in the Buddhist tradition, there is an archetype of the Bodhisattva. And the Bodhisattva is the words, two words. Sattva is a being, and Bodhi is awakening. So it's a being of awakening, an awakened being or an awakening being. And a bodhisattva is a being, a woman, a man, a person, who is committed to freedom, but not just for themselves, but for freedom, liberation for all beings, and who commits their life, their practice, to the awakening, to the freedom of all beings. And we're living in a moment, I believe, where we're all called upon to be bodhisattvas, to be beings, to be awakening beings, responding to the moment, the crisis, really, that we're living in, and asking ourselves, what is a wise and compassionate response? What is an appropriate response to this moment that we're living in? One of my teachers, Jack Kornfield, in his book, The Wise Heart, describes three qualities of a bodhisattva, or you could call a bodhisattva a spiritual warrior. She or he begins by acknowledging and accepting the truth of their situation. So we have to begin by taking refuge in the truth, in reality, and not in denial or not in avoiding. So what does it mean to take refuge in the truth? It's to acknowledge the pain that we're experiencing. It's to acknowledge what we know to be the case, or the best evidence we have or we can find about what is true, what is the actual situation that we're living in. Not to say that it's good or right or this is how we want it to be, but taking refuge in this is true, this is the reality. Just as, you know, we would take refuge if there's a war, it's the truth of what is happening. It's not what we want to see, But this is reality, this is the truth. So we take refuge in the truth. We acknowledge and accept the truth of the situation. The second thing, the bodhisattva, the second kind of work of the bodhisattva, is to find peace in herself, in himself, by engaging in a training or practices to let go of painful and afflictive states, to let go of greed and hatred and delusion, and to cultivate and develop positive states, qualities of heart and mind, like love, compassion, and peace. So take refuge in the truth, in reality, to accept the truth of what we're experiencing, and then to use that, our practice, to transform ourselves, to cultivate qualities of heart and mind that can allow ourselves to find freedom from suffering and to help others to free themselves from suffering too, which is the role of the bodhisattva. And the third work, if you like, or task of the bodhisattva is to envision actions, steps, or a path of liberation for themselves, for their community, and for their world, for our world. So what does it mean to be a bodhisattva and in a time of climate change, in a time when all of these changes are happening, all of these negative consequences for humans, for other species, for the planet? And how do we respond wisely and appropriately? How do we use our power to envision a way of responding? So how would it be for you in your own life to respond appropriately? What is this moment asking of you? And what is it asking of us collectively? Because this moment will cause for a collective response. I think it's necessary and important that each one of us does whatever we can. You know, drive electric cars or no cars, take public transport, drive a hybrid, or switch off lights, put solar panels on your roof. All of those things are wonderful and important things to do. But in order for change to come, it has to come through our collective action, through our collective inquiry, and our collective vision. So how do we work together to create a future that is a sustainable future? Jack Kornfield talks about envisioning, and he says, envisioning has enormous power. With our vision and imagination, we can help create the future. Envisioning sets our direction, marshals our resources. It makes the unmanifest possible. So how do we envision a way of moving forward? How do we respond? How do we respond from love rather than fear? Because when we move from a place of fear or from pessimism, or we're really shutting down and we're not seeing the range of possibilities. But the more that we can connect and love the earth and love the creatures of the earth and love the our fellow beings, and see that the illusion of separation of one from another is really an illusion. The deeper truth is our interconnection, the interconnection of us with all beings. You know, Einstein spoke about that, of how our task really as humans is to go beyond these narrow circles of just my family, just my friends, just my community, or maybe even just my religion, and to see, you know, to include everybody in that circle of connectedness, all humans and all beings. And seeing us, you know, we're together on this one planet that we have, this peaceful, fragile planet, this blue-green planet, one species of humans on a single planet with a common destiny. And as one of the leading activist in response to climate change, Bill McKibben, says. He said, what the world looks like will depend on what we do in the next few years. Everything is up for grabs. And what one of the things, and there's a film we'll see a clip of, a trailer for, called Planetary, which I watched today. Beautiful film. It'll be shown at Buddha Fest. They talk a lot about the stories of ourselves. And we're in a moment of history where we really do have a new story. And the story is of us as a whole species. And beyond our species, all sentient beings together on this planet. You know, our ancestors generations ago really had a smaller story. You know, a story of their nation or their group or their religion or their tribe. But we have this possibility, and it's already beginning, of a much larger story. And the more we can collectively create that story of another way of being, another way of living on the earth together, that doesn't involve separation, fear, endless growth. We can just produce more and more. But we know that we don't have the resources. The earth doesn't have the resources to do that. So how do we live in a different way? And what we'll see on that wall in a moment are some visions and some kind of pointing to visions of how we can work together, how we can live together in a different way. And if we have a little moment or two afterwards, we'll kind of finish. I'll finish off with a couple of words, but I'll just introduce them. Mathieu Ricard is, you might have heard of him. He's been called the happiest man in the world. He's a Tibetan monk or Tibetan tradition monk born in France, a molecular biologist, I think, son of a philosopher, wonderful, wonderful being. He's going to be at Buddha Fest, and this short 15-minute video is a TED talk that he gave. It'll be followed by just a short clip to Planetary, and if we got time, to another trailer. So we will we'll finish off. If you would like, we'll finish with a three-breath meditation. So if you'd like to just check into how things are right now as we're finishing this evening's program. And invite you, as we move from Earth Day and into the rest of the year, just to stay with this inquiry of what is a wise response? What is an appropriate response? What can I do? What can we do to be bodhisattvas in this time in our history, of the history of the planet, history of our species? Thank you all for your kind attention this evening, and enjoy this beautiful season and this beautiful planet of ours. Namaste.